Open up that Crystal Pepsi and get comfortable.
This is Dope Nostalgia.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dope Nostalgia. I'm Naomi, your host. My special guest today is a member of a band called Del Amitri from Scotland, who had a few big hits in the 90s. And I'll tell you more about that very shortly. I also want to invite you guys to call our hotline number. It's not even really like a hotline. It's more like an old school answering machine. So the number is toll free and it's 1-888-741-9192. Now, listen, I get it. People are kind of afraid of doing stuff on the phone like they used to. Everyone's kind of more into texting now. But that is the beauty of doing the hotline. I just wanted to do something kind of throwback where you leave a message. And if you'd like, we're going to play your message on the show or answer your questions, whatever you want. Just leave us a message. And no one's been calling. And that's so sad. So I'd really love to hear from you. Just pick up the phone and give me a call, okay? 1-888-741-9192. Let me know who you want to hear on the show. Let me know what you like, what you don't like. I don't care. And also, like, any questions you want to ask, just go for it. So give us a call. And now, in the meanwhile, we're going to go and give you a little bit of information on Del Amitri.
Wikipedia moment.
Please bear in mind that Wikipedia is not to be taken as actual 100% fact. Any donkey could edit it at any time. If I'm reading you the artist's bio, that stuff is real truth.
Del Amitri are a Scottish alternative rock band formed in Glasgow in 1980. Best known for their single Nothing Ever Happens, which reached number 11 in the UK. And their 1995 single Roll to Me, which was a top 10 hit in Canada and the United States. They have released 7 studio albums, 5 of which have reached the UK top 10. And they've sold over 6 million albums worldwide. Del Amitri's founding member and main songwriter Justin Curry explained in 2010 that the band's name was invented to be meaningless, basically a corruption of the Greek name Dimitri. In 2018, Curry clarified that Del Amitri is a bastardization of the name of a film producer who appeared in the closing credits of a film he saw in 1979. Probably Dimitri something, but we couldn't remember. So eventually through osmosis or maybe Chinese whispers, Dimitri became Del Amitri. Many sources have repeated a claim that the name was chosen because it is Greek for from the womb, but this is untrue. Del Amitri grew out of Justin Curry's Jordan Hill College school band. The band was formed with the original lineup of Curry on bass and vocals, James Scobie on guitars, Donald Bentley on guitars, and Paul Tyagi on drums. Scobie and Bentley left the band in 1982 to study at university. A new lineup came together after Curry replaced an advertisement in the window of a music store. Scobie and Bentley were replaced by Ian Harvey. Now, here's the thing. I don't know if I'm saying this name right. It looks like it's spelled I-A-I-N. So it's Ian. I'm not sure. Ian Harvey and Brian Toland. From then on, Curry and Harvey have remained the only constant members of the band. In 1984, Del Amitri were signed by Chrysalis Records, which released their debut self-titled album in 1985. 1989 brought the album Waking Hours, and that is when our special guest today, keyboard player Andy Alston, joined the band. Throughout the 90s, the band released 3 albums, Change Everything in 1992, Twisted in 1995, and Some Other Sucker's Parade in 1997. Please help me welcome to the show today the keyboard player and still current member of Scottish band Del Amitri. Welcome Andy Alston to Dope Nostalgia. Hello, Andy.
Hello there. How are you?
Oh, you can hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you good, yes.
I love your hat, honestly. I'm in Canada.
Your hat too, yeah.
It is minus... it's minus 25 outside in Canada, right where I am right now. So I need a hat like yours.
I know. I think it's about minus 3 out there, yeah.
Where are you located nowadays?
I'm in Glasgow.
And is that where you were originally from?
Yeah. Well, kind of, yeah. Close to there, yeah.
I wish it was. I wish it was minus three here.
I wish it was minus 20 here. Well, I don't really.
No. Well, I want to thank you so much for spending some time to chat with me today. So I'll be talking a bit about like both things that happened in the 90s for you and the new releases and what's coming up for you musically.
Sure thing, yeah. Uh-huh.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Now you mentioned, Andy, that you're from Scotland, originally born and raised.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes. 100%. Yeah. Mm.
Do you think there's a unique quality to Scottish music that sets it apart from any other?
Yes. Well, I was talking to somebody in America about, there was basically a scene called Postcard Records from Scotland. And basically, my mate James, have you heard of a band called James?
Yes. The song Laid, right?
Yeah, they were named after James because they were roadies, just a slight, 5 years after him, they were roadies for his band and they thought he's really cool and they became global stars. But there was a band called Orange Juice. Have you heard of Orange Juice?
Yes.
Yeah, they're right. There was a Postcard Records, basically, prior to that, just everybody thought they must go to London, to England. And then Postcard Records were started by a guy called Alan Horn, right, who was a kind of Andy Warhol of his time, just like not a super artist, but, manager of Velvet Underground kind of idea and just alternative. And he thought, I can just do it in Glasgow. It's a place, his original flat was that I've been into was about 20 minutes walk from here in the west end of Glasgow. He thought, like, we don't need to go to London. And then, he was they signed a bunch of bands and got hits from that. And it all influenced the kind of, people like Justin and Delamitri, I want to start a band. It really changed the music scene in Scotland. And that really made the big influence, really. In a way, like kind of Liverpool, you had the Beatles start a thing, I'm kind of curious about that development idea, but really in Scotland, it was Postcard Records that really kicked it off. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So do you think like the success of Delamitri was really huge for the country as well?
Yes, it was big, but there's a kind of tiny difference. I can think at the start when I get involved in Delamitri about the independent scene and the major label kind of scene. Some bands wanted to be, or some people I knew in bands like the Bluebells and all that were determined to be signed by the independent thing and then get picked up by a major label. And then you've lost your kind of amazing credibility. Delamitri was kind of like independent at the start. And then I joined the Waking Hours album. I was kind of working in a postgraduate in philosophy at the time and just like I wanted to get that finished. I didn't play in the original recording that was produced by David Kershenbaum, who produced Tracy Chapman's Fast Car.
Oh, wow.
But Justin decided, and Justin had the kind of strength of will, really, of just going like, no, I don't like the way that's turned out. Just put it in the bin and let's do it again. And I'd kind of finished my postgraduate then and just thought, I'll play in the next one that became a hit in America. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And internationally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you spent the majority of Delamitri's timeline in the band, but you came in right before the 90s, basically, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, it was kind of like I basically finished my postgraduate in 1987, but 1989 that record came out, 88, we were recording it or something. Justin had the idea, super idea, but let's just do it again with different producers. Yeah, not Tracy Chapman guy, who's American. I remember Justin telling me about it because I was just working hard my way as a student. But he just said, David Kershenbaum, he was the first guy in Britain to have a mobile phone.
What?
And then an enormous mobile phone, that kind of size.
A big brick.
All he seemed to be doing was ordering pizza, at the back of the studio and not really producing.
I love it.
as an executive.
Well, I mean, the arrival of you in the group Delamatri kind of lines up right on schedule with what this podcast is about, which is mostly 90s music. So what was the process like for you in the beginning, becoming a member and doing the album Waking
Well,
Hours?
I think, I don't know if this is completely true. I remember, I think this might be, you know, just like there was an American girl called Barbara Shores. Right, that she was basically a Postcard Records fan that came from California into Glasgow, and she was a mate of, you know, James Kirk, my mate from Orange Juice, and just James said, like, she changed Justin's view, really. She had just had an idea that might be just as simple as this, like, Justin, come round, I'll play a John Cougar Mellencamp record to you, you know, of that kind of, you know, meat and potatoes rock, just like, oh, right. And Justin going, oh, I've not heard this, you know, Barbara, you know, just flying from America. And, you know, at the time that it wasn't the internet and anything, just like, listen to this record, kind of changes your vision, really. And, oh, you really need a kind of keyboard player that can play the organ on top, or the piano, or the accordion, or whatever, yeah, the synth, you know, just a little bit of kind of icing on the cake idea. Yeah, and I just was like the guy, because, you know, basically, you know, Justin was the first record out with Chrysalis, you know, it was basically, and then they basically dropped the band, and Justin was working in a restaurant in Glasgow in the West End, not far from here, where I was a piano player in there. You know, I met Justin there. And he just had the idea, you know, just working there every night. I was basically playing piano every night. And then just thought, you're the guy for it. You know, so you can just kind of got the ideas in your head that can be a person. For the band. And he basically had the structure of the band idea, you know, of the four people. But we need that kind of little, you know, extra sauce, really, on it, of the keyboard. And you know, I was kind of up for doing that idea.
Just adds more flavor, more layers to the songs. It's a beautiful thing.
That, and that's really what the Delamitri thing's about.
Who are your musical influences as a child and into your teen years?
I kind of started off being a jazz player, you know, on the piano, you know, so. You know, people like Thelonious Monk and Professor Longhair and Count Basie is one that I really love. You know, just like, you know, just a little minimal piano touch. I love Count Basie's playing that. You know, I still listen to quite a lot of jazz, but really I like a lot of, you know, just at that time, that was really the biggest influence of me. And that you know, Justin could hear, you know, I'm not just somebody that reads music. I can just make up things in my head, you know. When he was working in the restaurant,
Did and you take music school too?
I did about a year of piano lessons, but then my piano teacher just gave up. But I kind of, that kind of built a foundation, you know, in a way. And then it was a kind of, I did my first degree in physics and maths, but for a bit of time in my second year, I was just really bored shitless by that. And I thought, I'd just go and practice piano all the time. And really, that's when I went hardcore into practicing piano and learned, you know, I can play a bunch of things in classical music. I can play a bunch of things in jazz way. I can really, you know, and that was maybe before I met Justin. You know, I've had a year's tuition that gets me in some door of piano ideas. And I'll practice all the scales now, and practice all the kind of things. And that made me quite good at it,
How long have you been playing accordion? Because that fascinates me. I love that instrument. I think it's because my grandfather played it as when I was a child, so.
Whereabouts are you from?
Where are you from? I'm from Western Canada. I'm in the city of Edmonton.
I remember being in the Midwest, you know, just touring there with when we were doing a lot of promo stuff and everything. So, polka, you know, you're the guy, you know, in that kind of, you know, Minneapolis kind of way, about just everybody's from that family kind of idea of accordion it. Basically, on the first record, the Waking Hours record, it was a guy, Blair Cowan, actually played the accordion. And on that record, and I never played accordion, but now I play a lot of different instruments. Guitar, easy peasy. easy peasy, acoustic, yeah. I can see them all over there. Yeah, I've got a collection of them. Mouth organ, easy. The accordion and the concertina. I'm not a super accordion player because I've not really got the background in that. It was basically after that record and we started touring, you're the guy that can play the accordion. Oh, it's just got a piano keyboard. Yeah. And actually in a kind of touring way, and also it makes kind of sense in a rock band way that you don't need the buttons, you know, because the bass is doing that and it's doing the cha-cha or whatever, you know. So I kind of know that world, but I basically, because I was on tour a lot, just they get kind of a wee bit, messed up if it's moved around all the time, you know, the kind of knitting network and behind the buttons. So I got that bit taken out of the accordion because basically what you're doing is adding, you know, melodies and chords or whatever on the right hand, you know, in the studio and live and all that. And you don't need to do the bass idea. But I can kind of do that, but I'm not as good as proper accordion players at that because I don't really, you know, practice that thing. But I can play the concertina and I can play other kind of accordion things. I'd spend a lot of time just, you know, trying out different instruments now.
But it's like you said too, you don't really need those buttons if you have a full band and a bass player and you probably don't need those buttons.
I remember even doing the last record we did, Fatal Mistakes, with the producer there. Dan, I can't remember his second name, but just he said, when I played some things in the studio, just like other accordion players who'd worked with it, they're all got too many buttons. They've all got too many sounds. Oh, do you like this sound? Do you like this sound? Oh, what about this? This is sound 28. You know, it's electronic and accordion and the accordion. And I've just got the idea, I know what I'm going to play. It's this sound. I know what button it's going to be. And it's just like this. Yeah, it fits in with the song in that way. It's the bass sound, you know, and it's just like, it's just a little, you know, melodic kind of motive, really. And just, I'm not asking questions to you. I just got the, and I think kind of in a way now I write a lot of music. Just, I know exactly when something's just exactly right. Yeah, not that kind of nervous. The guy was used to these whatever accordion player people like saying, oh, do you like this sound? Or what about this sound? You know, they're all kind of similar. You know, you're meant to be the bloody accordion player. I don't know what you're doing. But yeah.
That's their specialty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any favorite gear you like to use, like your favorite keyboards? What do you take with you on tour?
Basically, it depends where we're touring. If we're coming to America, you know, we did that American tour and we were in Australia and Europe and all that. If we're in the UK, we get a bigger setup and that's got, you know, a Leslie cabinet. Actually, I didn't use the Leslie cabinet last time. We got all the gear kind of in storage. Fender Rhodes, suitcase I've got, which is really great. And it's a Korg CX3 double manual organ with a Leslie cabinet that's kind of a more transistory thing, but with a Leslie cabinet, it sounds great. And a piano keyboard, it's basically an Korg keyboard. And basically a Nord kind of nowadays, a Nord Electro kind of thing that does kind of other sounds. As well as the piano key, the Nord Stage piano does. But kind of back in the day, you know, Wurlitzer electric piano. Yeah, I've got one of them.
Nice.
Well, yeah. Uh-huh. And I've got a beautiful Korg Monopoly there, synthesizer, which I just love. Yeah, which just makes really weird sounds, yeah, for things I do. But I really love, studio playing a grand piano and all that. I call
Just an
that.
acoustic piano.
Yeah.
That's what feels the best.
Yeah, and also, a Hammond organ, a real one that just acts, it's got the waterfall keyboards, it's got the, a proper, Steinway grand piano's got 100 moving parts inside every key. You know,
Oh.
Hammond organ's constructed differently with, not weighted keys, and the feel of it and the drawbars. And I found that thing the last, when we were touring America, in different places we had different gear, but the Nord thing, if you can actually, the organ thing that I basically use for the left hand, if you can actually move the drawbars, just that, what a kind of organ, they just move them in real time, not with LED buttons that are just bloody annoying, that actually that pulling them in and out, that you react to what Justin's doing, you react to whatever's doing, that you pull that and push that back in real time. And that's what Hammond organ does, really. Not something that's just through a screen kind of idea.
Yeah. I feel like it's more tactile and yeah, more enjoyable to play. What was your favorite album that you released in the decade of the 90s?
I like Twisted Things. That's great. I like Change as well. I say between the two of those.
Yeah.
All right, in that decade of other things I played on, I think there's a guy, that, people that are really into music in a different way. Delamitri is one thing, but I like a lot of different things. And there was a thing in the postcard scene, there was a guy called Paul Quinn, that just all the super music kind of journalists went like, wow, that's it. And Justin would say his voice is to die for. Justin's a good singer as well, but he would know that Paul is the man, really. And his record that me and James played on, that's really good in the 90s. And that's something kind of that's something like Delamitri, that's fine, that's good, and it got major release and loads of people know about it. But there's other things that just kind of fell between the cracks, really, that you
Yeah.
think that record's beautiful. That you played on.
When you talk about things that fall through the cracks, like some of those, album tracks that should have been hits and such, what would be one of your favorites that you feel fell through the cracks?
Oh, and Delamitri.
Yeah. Man, I'd
I
love
don't
to play a
know
clip of it for you on the show.
many. So many. Right. I would say, I really can't remember them all because it's quite an industrial, it's basically Justin's songs and he's really good at that.
He writes
And that's,
lyrics mostly, right?
yeah. And in a way, this kind of idea of songwriterliness, I'd listened to someone on Spotify, I'm not really. Talked to Justin plenty, but I've not seen him recently. But when he said really the first album that he did on Chrysalis, the band kind of made it as a committee, and he not really found out, because he was dead young, how to write a song, and it really came to Waking Hours. That was maybe about 3 years later or 4 years later or something. I've got to write the songs, myself. That find out that you can do it. And I found out I can do that now. There's some songs that, old songs that we do, and I'm just like saying to Justin, just do this as piano and vocal, just screw the band arrangement, just do it like this way, grand piano and vocal. And there's something really minimal and pure about that. Your voice and your words are great, and sometimes you get lost in a kind of symbols and everything, but if you just hear it that way, and people in the live thing can then go like, wow, that's great. But certainly, Justin's way of that when we record a lot of B-sides, basically for kind of CD releases, in different formats, and we were really good at that. Or five songs for that, they don't come out in albums. And there's one called I think it's called The Long Way Down.
The Lonely Day.
Yeah, well, it's we did it on a live show about a year ago or something like that. I might not have the title right. I mean, there's things like Spit in the Rain and all that don't get released on albums and all that. But I played that a million times. But sometimes you hear something that you played, 35 years ago that you've not bloody listened to because you just went into a studio and did it. And you didn't really think about it. It's particularly that way of production back then was really like, oh, just now we're spending ages getting the drum track right. We're spending ages getting the bass part right. Oh, you come in and do the keyboards, like play a few things, and then you fuck off, now it's acoustic guitar time or something like that. And then it gets released in a format. And then that's basically a load of things that people get or musicians. Oh, that's that thing. They don't even, but like actors don't necessarily watch the movie that they were in, or maybe have it somewhere in a cupboard or something. But then you come back to it and you go like, that is really good. And other kind of people are, because they're kind of for fans and all that who want to collect these things, and then they're going like, well, that's really good.
That's true. Oh, the collector fans and the diehard fans, the ones that know all the tracks.
Yeah, and they would know
The
more than
best.
me, definitely.
Remind you of songs that you forgot about.
But I just found a song on Bandcamp the other day that I played, and those things that he played one night with this guy Paul Quinn. I'm talking about this amazing singer in the Glasgow Film Theatre, and it sounds magic, that because it's just real in the time of playing and the reacting and the liveness is great of that track. And I think a load of things I've done in Delamitri B-sides are probably just like that kind of idea. It's right, you're reacting to the thing, or play some accordion on this or something, or just like, but you don't really, so you sometimes get surprised when you get back to them and go like, that's really good. Because
It's a good
also
feeling.
there's something kind of more intimate sometimes to things that aren't, really proper. This is a single kind of thing. It's all been mastered in this way. It's just like that kind of naivety and spontaneity of it that connects with it.
There's something wrong and you can't put your finger on it right then. Roll to me. And I don't think I have ever seen a soul so in despair. So if you want to talk the man through, guess who will be there?
Now, did you feel the impact of the grunge era with the music that you were trying to make at that time? Did you feel a pressure from maybe the record companies or anyone else about the music you were trying to make? Because you made great pop rock songs with that sensibility. And I know a lot of artists I've talked to who were in the same position as Delamitri were experiencing that pressure from the grunge era.
Yeah, I'm not really, because I wasn't part of the record company kind of world. I was just a musician. So I don't really know, whether Justin kind of felt he's kind of led the record company or kind of saying you got to go in a Nirvana kind of direction. But I would say kind of like that, being somebody else, record on Twisted is kind of rocky and heavy. But in a way, I can think like that. The last record we made, Can You Do Me Good? I think that's called, in 2000, that was released in 2001 or two. Not the last one we did, but the one where we got dropped really. But that was a guy, Commissioner Gordon, who'd previously done Lauryn Hill, and we did it in New York and New Jersey. But at one point I heard, there's no accordion in this. Like, what? You know, are you sure about that? No, just like, you know, just like, if you're going the Nirvana direction, you don't have accordions, but you don't have Tell Her This, you don't have the other lovely sensitive songs. Yeah. But his production, the idea wasn't that. It was more from a hip-hop direction, you know, and but also I remember going there when, you know, the guy that produced that had this idea with Justin, like, oh, you know, he was normally used to producing records in the R&B kind of whatever. Oh, I've got the bass player, I've got the drummer, I've got the keyboard player, I've got these guys in my phone book. And Justin was like, no, we're a band. You know, we all play. You know, we're used to that way of recording. You know, you can have some other guy then. Yeah. But that on that record, there is no, I don't think there was any, you know, the kind of organic structure of things meant you had a bit of kind of balladry. And it's not like Nirvana never did that thing, but yeah, and obviously did Nirvana Unplugged and all that. But I think it just had the, it really kind of goes back to Waking Hours idea. A lot of it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like 80%, you know, rock band way and 20% acoustic way. That was pretty much a thread that runs through it.
When you were at the height of the songs like Roll, and then, you know, Always the Last to Know, and these songs became big and they hit in the States, Roll to Me and everything. Were you like, how did you do absorbing going on the TV shows? Like, I know you I think you did Conan O'Brien.
I think
you might have done Letterman.
I think they had there were certain ones at Delamitri that I didn't do because they got their own house band.
Like Letterman.
Yeah. I think I stayed in New York that time, but I didn't appear in the thing. You know, just like they've got their way of doing it, which is, you know, a format really. But yeah, there was Conan and there was Letterman and there's, but I don't think I appeared in those. But I played plenty of TV shows. I did the Jimmy Kimmel Show last time in LA. But basically, when even in the UK, you know, just record companies would get you TV shows, and then eventually, it's not really, you're on some kids show and you've been out and out before and you're not happy clappy as they expect it to be, obviously, because you're like, what the fuck are we doing this? But you know, you could see their agenda in it, like thinking this is an effective marketing campaign. You know, and it's good that they did work in that way, but it's just part of what the 90s was, really. It doesn't exist anymore. By and large. Yeah. Or it doesn't. It doesn't a much more, you know, we recommended loads of record shows, loads of TV shows, but no bands at that level would be now. They'd just be the big artists. Yeah.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hi. If you enjoy Dope Nostalgia, thank you. Consider becoming a Patreon subscriber today for as little as $1 a month. It helps keep the show on the air and rolling. So if you want to check out our Patreon, it's at patreon.com/dopenostalgia. $1 a month, and you'll be helping support one of your favorite podcasts.
Hi, we're 4PM, and this is Dope Nostalgia.
Want to understand the world we live in today? Just go back 30 years to the 1990s. Nearly every aspect of society underwent major changes in the 90s that are still being felt today. Some things weren't so great. Hairstyles, trash TV, and baggy pants. But you know what was great? The music, the movies, TV, and changes in technology that were nothing short of revolutionary. I'm Kathy Gonzora, and on each episode of my podcast, History of the 90s, I look back at important news events and pop culture trends from the decade. So you can not only understand what happened, but also learn how it impacts you today. Everything from the end of communism and apartheid to supermodels and Super Nintendo. If it happened in the 90s, you'll hear about it on History of the 90s.
Hi, may I take your order, please?
Big Mac, McDLT, a quarter pounder with cheese, filet, a fish, a hamburger, a cheeseburger, McChicken, and McNuggets, tasty golden french fries, regular and larger size, a salad, chef or garden, or chicken salad, oriental, and for breakfast, egg, big muffin, hotter cakes, a sausage, maybe omelette, big muffins, all three kinds of Danish hash browns, two and four dessert, hot apple pies, and sundaes, three varieties, the saucer cone, three kinds of shakes, and chocolate, chip cookies, and a drink of Coca-Cola, diet Coke, and orange drink, a Sprite, and coffee, and a chocolate, also apple, orange, and grapefruit juice. I love McDonald's, good and great taste, and I get this all at one place.
Now let me get this straight, you want a Big Mac, McDLT, a quarter pounder?
As a band, did you deal with the Napster file sharing era back when everything changed?
Well, basically, I can see in a way, there's a thing called the 20th century, right? At the start of it, then you get people like Charlie Chaplin can sell a million records. Harry Lauder, a guy from Scotland, sells a million records. The end of the 20th century, Napster arrives, file sharing arrives. When I used to teach at university then, I remember telling people about copyright infringement and movie houses like Star Wars were really frightened by video recorders. And in America, they went to court to stop video recorders because they saw that as liquid death. Movie sets, they won't exist if you have video recorders, if you start something like that, and eventually the court case gets settled, you're only allowed to use a video recorder or any kind of recording device for time shifting a program. You know, because it's on that night, you're not going to be in that night. You can watch it another night. You're not allowed to have an archive. You know, it's illegal to have these things because George Lucas was like, Jesus, this is going to kill us, you know, but you're allowed to do things for little reasons. But basically music, you know, it's really hard to sell music nowadays because people are used to not buying it. You know, if you said water costs money or something, in Scotland there's loads of water you can, but if you change things where you don't have to pay, it's hard to get the genie back in the bottle. With movies, the genie's still in the bottle. But once file sharing's around, you know, it's really, you know, I do this part-time thing in college of teaching kids the music kind of who want to be in the music industry, but there's no music industry. There is in America, there is for big acts, but for people that had record companies, for people that don't have record companies, how do you get something out? You know, it's hard to see what you produce, what format it goes in, that you could have any income from, because you know, people are used to getting it all for nothing, really, or Spotify or something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in the last 20 years, they don't even know what it's like to go buy music as much as we did, you know?
No, not at all. When I used to buy a lot, and I've not bought music recently, but I write a lot of music, you know, I play a lot of music, you know, for people and all that. And I can see, you know, we write a lot of songs, me and James Oranges, and it comes down to mine every day, and Justin sings some and whatever sings some, but it's hard for these things to get out, you know, people know. And we're going on tour with Simple Minds in March.
Nice.
But I'll get Jim Kerr to sing some, you know. I know he will. Yeah, because the song will be right for him. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned teaching, and I understand you have a PhD. And so how long have you been teaching as well?
Oh, about 20 years or something now. Something like 22 years, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's your PhD?
Well, it's an MSc in philosophy of science.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was interested in that at that point, yeah. I'm still kind of interested in that, yeah, philosophy, yeah. Yeah.
That's brilliant.
I
love it.
Yeah, I thought about going into that world, but it's too hard. You know, everybody works. And, you know, I've got two kids, and my older boy just got a first in maths.
Oh, wonderful.
He's got brains, yeah. I know how to do that thing, yeah. But I can see, you know, he was saying, I don't really want to just, you know, struggle in a university for years, doing a part-time job, you know, go into another industry where you got the qualifications for it. Where in the, say if you're doing philosophy or something, it's really impossible to find a position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that you work for 10 years in. But I did like doing that kind of research thing, philosophy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I heard that the record company was going to pull a single release of a song called Medicine from the mm-hmm. album Some Other Sucker's Parade. Is it true that they pulled the release because they didn't want the song to be misconstrued that it would have been about Princess Di? Did you see that? That's like in the Wikipedia. Like that's... Did that happen?
I've certainly not heard that before. That's crazy. I know the song, but yeah. I know, I've got no idea. I really don't know if that's... I'll ask Justin the next time I've seen.
I'm curious. Yeah, that's in the Wikipedia for Delamitri. Right, and I said...
No, I can't help me in that, but that's utterly crazy if it's true. You know, there's a catchy song as well. Huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ask him. I'm curious. now, I also read about you doing musical collaborations with prison inmates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
That was interesting. I met there, you know, basically, you know, the prison's a kind of world like any world. Like there's some real assholes in it. There's a lot of accidents. There's some kind of weird murderer, you know, evil people. Mm-hmm. But by and large, in Glasgow, there's fights happen. There's people, and people I know that worked in prison or meet somebody from the same street they're in, or some domestic thing, you know, that has happened, or you know, there's just, or car accident things, you know, or drug kind of things happened. Mm-hmm. You meet kind of interesting people who are by and large, you know, when they're in prison, reconciled, you know, to like, I did that thing, you know, and that terrible thing happened that night, and now I've got to deal with it. There was certainly one guy in there, Tony. I thought his songs were amazing, you know. And there was some guys. I'd actually recorded a song. There's a guy. There's a band called Trash Can Sinatras, who are Frank Reeder. He lives in California. He sent me a vocal, and a girl from a rave band in Australia. She did the back vocals.
Mm.
It sounds magic. And it was a song written by two prisoners and me. You know, I got it just at Christmas, and it's really good now. It's just exactly right. You know, I had to remember doing that 10 years ago. I just had the thing on that computer, and I thought, like, that could be beautiful. Mm. It was written by two guys and me. And you get the right fiddle player playing in the that comes in the middle, kind of like Rod Stewart did in You Wear It Well.
Yeah.
I had these ideas. It's really good now. I did a song with Justin called, what's that called? I've Been Saved by Your Presence. And that was Tony that wrote that. And that's really, I've sent it to a couple of people in America. I go like, wow, that's beautiful. It's a kind of little acoustic ballad. You know, I've been saved by your presence. I could bathe in your essence. You don't know by now. I'm trying to show you how. You know, just like, he's got real words, you know. And, you know, a lot of the other prisoners were kind of, some of them were kind of like, whatever, just said, I'd like to write a song. I don't know how, but some people who've had a kind of music thing back before, all that time of thinking about it, with all that time in your hands.
Yeah.
I remember I was working in there when, because I was teaching about maths in there as well, but there was one guy in there, and I can't remember his name, but he was from Nigeria, and he'd been doing a maths PhD. But then basically he'd, you know, when he was leading a kind of tough world in Manchester Uni, then working in a restaurant, but that takes up too much time in your hands when you got to really work in a PhD world, because, you know, junior catering thing, it's all day kind of thing, and all and late into the night. And then somebody came to him, I can drive a van up to Aberdeen. I'll give you 30 grand. That'll pay for your accommodation. He did it and got arrested. And he did say to me, oh, can you find my MSc online? I look for it. Then all I can find is evil drug dealer, you know, when you put somebody's name in the Aberdeen Press kind of thing. And also, he did have apparently 6 grand in a Bible for marrying an Aberdeen girl, you know, just for maybe he needed residency things that people would help with or some. But he just said, oh, I want to work in this maths thing. With anybody can work on music ideas. Anybody can do nothing. Anybody can just work, you know, play snooker nonstop. But and then I said, I've not seen you up in this maths thing for a year or something. Like, what have you been doing? Crying. You know, just like my life's fucked up. I'm crying. But yeah. Then what do you need for maths? I need this program. I'll bring it in. Then you'll kind of thing. You need that math scripting program. I can teach your maths. You know, it's partial differentials and all that. That's what your PhD is all about. But you need some way of writing something. And once you've got it, you can do it. And I'll actually get the shit in for you. But yeah, I thought it was an interesting thing. You know, all these guys together, or girls as well. There's some who talk. Some who are real work.
It's such a therapeutic thing to write, to study these things. Mm-hmm. Like, we even know as songwriters ourselves too, it's so much like therapy to get those feelings and thoughts out on paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, mm-hmm. I really think it's a wonderful thing you're doing working with them so that they have that outlet and mm-hmm. that creativity, because they have a lot to say, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, well, certainly, the guys that were good, you know, just for really... Because also, you know, I made up a kind of course there about kind of recording thing. Like, you can see this bloody computer there. You get a free program for sequencing kind of idea. There's some rap guys or some whatever, dance guys or some kind of, there's a lot of people not interested, but there's some kind of songwriter guys. Like, it's basically like you got a tape recorder, you know, which is a computer that they don't know about because they're a bit older or something like that. Mm-hmm. You can record on these things, and then I can add things to it, you know, keyboard parts or something, and edit it, you know, and it's different from what they would get from a guitar teacher, which is just like, oh, this is the way, you know, some Bob Dylan song goes or something. The guy can already play guitar a million times better than the guitar teacher, you know, because he's always been a guitar player, but recording something, that's got permanency to it.
Now, kind of going towards what's going on now in the last couple of years here, I know after 20 years after the release of the last album, and then Fatal Mistakes just finish it in the nick of time before COVID, right? When you guys finished recording it. And how did you deal with the whole pandemic and trying to market this album and release it?
Well, basically, the world shut down, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, because I remember when we finished recording, I remember being in the studio. The catering was getting worse every day. You know, by day in the last week, there's nothing left in Waitrose. You know, actually, when somebody was making food, I was all like, oh, this is Thai, whatever. This is kind of a bit show-offy. And then it's getting simpler and simpler. And then the last day when we came up on train back to Glasgow, I came up on the train and... there's no day on the train, I think. And you come up as isolation. You know, you're kind of in isolation in the studio. But the first day of isolation was actually coming back. And then Justin and Ian had to mix the album with Dan, the producer. And that was all... And they're used to kind of a way of working in studios that you can't go in studios. It's all remote and it's all kind of fast transmission lines for a big kind of mixing idea, you know, kind of in a professional way. Then it's not the same as doing it together. What about doing this like this, you know? But the thing kind of, eventually got done, and then I think all those kind of remote things eventually, I mean, at the time the kind of world juddered to a stop, and it did, but then eventually people work out modus vivendi, really, of you can do and really even the kind of teaching thing or what we are doing now, you know, there's quite a lot you can do that you find out at the time, when I was getting recordings from people, oh, you're in America, send them an email, you know, that they didn't really think of before, or even in Glasgow. Yeah, we can't go into others' houses, you know. Or even I was talking to a friend who's a producer for the Glasgow station here, just said they used to do this thing, going round, it's a lovely girl violinist house or something like that. You play this back violin piece. You can't go in there. Just use your iPhone to record it. And people didn't think of that really before. Your iPhone's got quite a good mic in it. You know, you're a kind of professional person. You got something in it, and we can broadcast that on radio. You know, you play the thing beautifully, but you can hear, just like you can hear from a phone, you can hear somebody's voice. Mm. You can hear their violin part in it. You don't need the guys with the big boom stands and all that in isolation. And really, you didn't learn about these things until that that catastrophe occurred. And now that kind of like, that's not a bad idea. Just use your phone.
But yeah, that's true with the pandemic and everything. Trying a lot of these new things were tried, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've learned there's like, I think that's how we all learned how to video conference, because mm-hmm. not everybody could have done that.
Yeah, totally, totally.
Now I heavily rely on Zoom, especially to make this show. Yeah. So I'm glad that everyone knows.
You know, I've got somebody to teach physics tonight. Yeah. On Zoom. I wouldn't have had it.
Now, before we wrap it up, I want to talk about the album that you were excited about, new CD. Now, mm-hmm. it's under Bandcamp, Crooked Timbers.
Well, that's the kind of collective idea. There's now, I don't know if you heard of a band called Chic.
No, I haven't.
Yes, you have. Have you heard of a band called 10cc?
Yes.
Yes, right. You've heard of a band called Chic. Have you heard of a band guy called Nile Rodgers?
Nile Rodgers, yes.
He was he's the guitarist in Chic. They changed disco forever.
Okay.
Right. You know, just like they sold 500 million albums. 10cc sold 30 million. Both these people want to sing my songs. You know, that's, I want to build a collective. It's international. you know, I don't care that much. But I play with Del Mitri, but there's another world with James. I do, you know. Yeah. Of, you know, they're sending some to somebody in Algonquin, USA right now. Of a CD. Where these people that are very successful artists who are millionaires want to sing a song. An idea goes in their head. They can't get rid of it, you know. And they're middle-aged or elderly, but they still got to do it. And they can do it because they found out. I think people kind of found out, maybe, particularly in lockdown, they're staring at their computer. There's nothing new on it. Then an email comes through from me, and they hear a song, and they go, like, I didn't write that, but there's something good about it. That I found some random people. So basically I've got sax player from there, I've got violin player from there, I've got somebody who sells a lot of records in there, somebody from Switzerland I was emailing last night. You know, and it's just that I think this could be a kind of group of people. And the way people listen to things now, you listen to other things that go from there to there, it's not necessarily a whole band thing. So basically we made a record of for Creative Scotland of and that's called the Broadside Ballads. In Scotland, and it'll be the same in America or in France or in Germany. There was a thing called newspapers before that time. There was culture. There's a thing now called mobile phones that has Facebook and Twitter on it. Mm-hmm. Before print or mobile phones, people pinned up things in High Street. They were called Broadside Ballads.
Oh.
Right? Words that people sold maybe for a quarter of a cent or something like that. And it's a kind of commercial world. If you get it printed and you sell it, it's a little verse. People want to hear this story. Like Twitter, they want to hear a story. But back in the 19th century and 18th century, they bought these things, and there may be stories of seafaring or romance or last words from the hangman's kind of world, or, you know, disputes or something, that they wanted something. So we made up this CD of songs that come from 250 years ago.
Wow.
The same things. You know, the girls kind of singing about somebody going away in the British Empire. Write back to me. Call me again. That's the way a young girl with a mobile phone who's not had a phone message. It's exactly the same message that people have in their hearts about romance. You know, so these things from there are right. It's ancient. The only people I know about these things are kind of finger-in-the-ear fiddle players. Mm-hmm. They're old folk kind of people. No, reimagine it so it's disco. You know, so it's brand, you know, it's different in different ways. Yeah. And I think the record's really good.
Broadside Ballads?
Broadside Ballads. So if you go anywhere, you know, I think, you know, I've done an application for Edinburgh Festival for this idea. You know, I work all the time. And these things, where we'll make another one. If you go to, you know, if you're in the kind of arts world, you could go to France or some. They've got an archive. It's got a library. If you're in America, you know, there's a Smithsonian Institute or some will have ancient scripts that are verses that people don't really know about. In Scotland, they've got it. You know, in National Library of Scotland, that you can find online a whole archive of them that are sorted into different categories. And, you know, if you start with an idea like this, you know, then you can maybe, in an arts kind of funded way, go to different countries and, you know, talk to people about their local archives and show how you write a song that's built from your sources, really. So that's the idea of the Broadside Ballads. They're ancient. It's basically hot off the press, the news from 1823, yeah, which is kind of was interesting in 1823. And there's some things, I'd change some things, but of the words or whatever, just to make them, you know, I change a letter down into a mobile phone.
To make it easier to read or understand?
To connect with, really. But the idea, you know, there are certain things that are maybe written in a more sexist and racist way that you think, I ought to kind of make it work for people now. Yeah, but the ideas are basically the same kind of ideas people have now. Yeah.
What a wonderful idea.
There's a million of these things.
I love the idea.
You know, there's things beyond copyright.
Yeah. Well, copyright's only 100 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are, you know, these are just like, they're usable text.
What can we look forward to? So this project, what other projects are you working on right now?
Well, basically, I've got in touch with a bunch of people. You know, in a way, we've got some American stars. And like, I want to make another record. Did that first Crooked Fingers record, but, you know, just like send it to a few people. Without a record company, it's harder. But in a way, I think kind of another record, you know, a lot of middle-aged people make kind of middle tempo, minor songs of it. No, if I do a record, it's got to have that disco thing. It can have a middle tempo, guy in it, but it's got to have something that really shocks you. That might be about real dance world and just in your face, you know, getting your feet right now, idea that you're not really expecting. But I've got, in a way, there's nobody in Glasgow I know that can do that, but I know some girls in America who are from the disco scene.
Yes.
I've written some things like that, and it's just connecting with these people, where it just is that it's you can't deny it, it's funky as hell.
I love that you're working in all different genres. So great.
I just hear that, you know, I think in a way it's just kind of you know, YouTube's got a great resource. I just sometimes hear some things, or, you know, in the kind of UK, you know, there's Radio Scotland that's just a bloody nightmare of nonsense and boringness that I never listen to. But sometimes I listen to things in foreign radio stations or in YouTube. I just go like, shit, that's gorgeous. I want to hear what's going on in it. And I'm quite good at just figuring out a chord sequence. You know, because I'm kind of from a jazz background, and Justin is kind of mysterious. I just can hear things and rewrite them that he can't really do. I just hear some pretty much once. I've got it. That's what's going on inside it. And then I think that's beautiful. That really is beautiful. And, you know, it's kind of stopped me in the tracks. And it might be funky, but it might just be a beautiful acoustic guitar idea. And I've actually got a guy coming around tomorrow who's a beautiful guitar player. You know, for a beautiful, sweet song. And I've got the girl in mind for that. But I've got a journalist who knows her, said, if you write the thing right, because if you do it right, if you spend all the time thinking about it and getting it right, and she hears it, she'll go, that is good. And it's just, because in a way, it's not just finding something obvious, you know, where... because she doesn't know the song, you know. It's going up the strange paths that you find things, kind of like the Broadside Ballads idea. That there's words that aren't, you know, just from the 20th century, and ideas that aren't from that, or there's songs that you don't know, or there's chord sequences that are beautiful that you don't know, that pretty much even from classical music, you know. Some from Schubert, something like, oh, fuck, that's really good.
I love some of those chord progressions from even when you like listen to a song, a Christmas carol, that's like a hymnal, those chord progressions that don't exist in popular music, you know?
Yeah. And I think I remember going to see Burt Bacharach, and I think I went there, and I was it Justin or one of the other singers I was there with, and it was an open air place in venue in Glasgow, and it was great. Actually, it was really great. I was just asking a couple of people, what are you listening to? You know, you got a big band of him, and it was a couple of years ago or something, but And, you know, I wonder what people are listening to. In a way that the band aren't the real band. It's not the real Dion Warwick or some, but, you know, and I think, I'm actually listening to Chords. I'm figuring out what he's doing there, because he actually said at the time, I can't really do rock and roll. You know, there's a kind of whole big financial industry there at the time that he said, I tried writing some rock and roll things, and he played a couple of them, and I kind of knew what I meant. I didn't really believe it. You know, it was quite good, but not that good. You know, when there's an enormous kind of, you know, Stones and Beatles kind of, you know, band kind of world, or that he's, I'm more from a kind of musical and film kind of background. What is the difference between rock and roll and what he's doing? It's the chord sequences, and it's the kind of funny time signature changes, and it's the way the logic of getting from A to B goes, and just, you know, that, I mean, the words were by Hal David anyway, and, you know, the songs were delivered by other people, but I think, I mean, it's the melodies are beautiful as well, but melodies can be beautiful, but the chord sequences he uses, you know, and the timing of them, and it's kind of like when I hear something exactly right, a classical kind of idea, I go like, what the fuck's going on in that? And then figure out,
I'm so happy to talk to you today, Andy. I really learned a lot. Thank you.
Nice talk to you.
As an addendum to today's show, since this interview was conducted in mid-January and the episode is now coming out at the beginning of March, some new developments have occurred. I saw today on BBC.com that frontman Justin Curry has now revealed he has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Since this is a rather new development, all I know for sure right now is that this diagnosis has come ahead of a major tour for the band. I just want to wish all the love and support and prayers that we can to Justin Curry and the band and his family as well right now. And sending you guys some love.
Social media, yeah, we've got it. Send us an email, dopenostalgiapodcast@gmail.com. Twitter, Nostalgia Dope. Or on Insta, dope_nostalgia.
This podcast is licensed by SoCan because we believe that artists should be paid for their work.